Last month, voters in Portland, Maine, approved a ballot measure making Portland the first city on the East Coast to legalize marijuana possession for adults. Susan Sharon of Maine Public Radio reported on it, and there was one part of her story that really caught our attention. She talked to Rob Campia of the Marijuana Policy Project. It's an advocacy group dedicated to legalizing cannabis.
There's five states where we're lobbying in the state legislatures, and then five states where we think it's likely that we'll be able to pass ballot initiatives. This will all be over the course of the next 4 years.
That includes most of the New England states. Campia says they're being targeted for legalization efforts because polls show the chances for success are good.
The public support is at 50% or higher in all these ballot initiative states, and really, quite frankly, the other states too, where we're lobbying the state legislatures.
Massachusetts is one of those states. Right now, Bay State voters are ambivalent about it. A September 2013 survey by Public Policy Polling found that 49% of Massachusetts voters think marijuana should be legalized, 39% disagreed, 12% weren't sure.
Nevertheless, advocates hope to get a legalization question on the Massachusetts ballot by 2016. So today, we're going to take a look at the significant policy and economic challenges states face when they do legalize pot. It's already happened in Washington and Colorado, two states where retailers will be selling legal marijuana to adults starting next month.
They're facing big questions. How large will the pot market be? How should it be taxed? Should there be less law enforcement? What about the spillover to states where it is illegal? And how do you create a legal market out of a once illegal substance?
Now, in a minute, we're going to talk with the nation's leading marijuana policy expert about these vexing problems. He advised Washington State through this very thicket of questions. But first, let's hear briefly from Bill Downing. He's a member of Bay State Repeal, which is pushing for marijuana legalization here in Massachusetts. Bill Downing, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
So let me first ask you, how close are you actually in terms of your effort to get a legalization question on the ballot?
Well, in our effort, we're not very far. But as far as the people of Massachusetts are concerned, we're long overdue.
Okay. And so do you have confidence in terms of getting a ballot question on by 2016?
Certainly do, especially when we hear people like Rob Campia talking about targeting states like Massachusetts, because funding for previous ballot initiatives has come with the help of people like Rob.
Mm. So let me ask you, we're going to talk in a minute with someone who knows a lot about the challenges of what happens when you actually do legalize marijuana. I mean, what do you think, honestly, if it is to come to pass in Massachusetts, are the biggest challenges if legalization happens?
Well, I think the biggest challenges are, frankly, shedding the prohibition era mentality about it. I really like Mark Kleiman. He actually has spoken for MassCann at our Freedom Rally on Boston Common many, many years ago. And I remember Mark well, and I respect him. But we've also got to realize that as Mark is speaking, this is how he makes his living. If it weren't for his ability to impress people with the difficulties of regulating cannabis, he wouldn't have a job.
So you're referring to Mark Kleiman, who we're going to be speaking to in just a moment here. Are you looking to sort of the challenges and questions that regulators in Washington and Washington State and Colorado have been wrestling with? And do you think similar things would happen here? Do you have answers for them?
Yes, I do. And the basic answer is both KISS and don't reinvent the wheel. We already have agricultural commodities that to a great degree are regulated in a normalized fashion. And the only difference between this agricultural commodity and those would be restrictions against children's access to them.
Okay.
But we don't need to make new laws about, for instance, purity, packaging, things like that, because we already have laws for that, for parsley and tomatoes and other agricultural substances.
Okay. So that's Bill Downing. He's a member of Bay State Repeal, which is pushing for marijuana legalization here in Massachusetts. Bill Downing, thank you so much for your time.
Very welcome. Thank you.
So let's turn now to Mark Kleiman. He's a professor at the University of California, Los Angeles, School of Public Affairs, and author of several books, including Marijuana, Costs of Abuse, Costs of Control, Against Excess, Drug Policy for Results, and When Brute Force Fails, How to Have Less Crime and Less Punishment. He's also one of the people that the state of Washington turned to for advice on how to create a legal market out of marijuana, a once illegal substance in that state. He joins us now from Los Angeles. Mark Kleiman, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So we read about you in a recent article in The New Yorker that really took a step-by-step approach in terms of talking about the unexpected challenges, or maybe to you they're not unexpected, but as regulators find them, when they actually do try to legalize marijuana and create this legal market. And so I was wondering if we could sort of take that big think approach with you here, even though it has not happened and is not yet on any ballot here in Massachusetts. But as we heard, it may be coming and voters may have to think about it. So let me first ask you, Mark, do you think...
Or I should say, preferably the legislature would think about it.
Oh, and why would you... before voters do?
Yes. Initiatives are a good way to get around deadlocks in the political process or situations where there's some corrupt influence that keeps beneficial legislation from happening.
Okay.
But Tom Lehrer once said of folk music that the problem with it is that it's written by the people who, by and large, have no musical talent. They're also not so great at drafting laws. The legislative process, for all the people say about it, requires proposals to go through a process of criticism and expert analysis, and you've got lawyers who know how to draft bills drafting it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if it's done by the legislature, it can be changed next year by the legislature when new information comes in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was just, we were looking at actually legislative efforts in Massachusetts, and there was a recent one in 2013, but it was sort of sent down the rabbit hole to committee in January 2013 and has not emerged from there. So it doesn't seem as if at this point in time the legislature is terribly eager to take this up. But let me ask you more broadly.
Yeah.
Do you think advocates for marijuana legalization accurately understand the complexity of the challenge once the substance is legalized?
Some do and some don't. Mr. Downing apparently doesn't or doesn't want to. Notice that when you asked him what the complexities were, he never mentioned the problem of drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the difference between cannabis and parsley is that relatively few people go into treatment centers and say, I have a parsley problem. Can you help me? And any policy to deal with cannabis that doesn't deal with the fact that some people get into a bad habit that they find it hard to change isn't being serious.
Yeah. Well, you advised the Liquor Control Board in the state of Washington, the group that has been given the task of creating this legal market for marijuana in Washington, about what to do. And they're about to do it come January 2014. So I'd like to walk through some of the particularly thorny issues here that you raised with them. First of all, how about law enforcement? I mean, you told the Seattle City Councilors that, quote, that people want cops chasing burglars rather than pot sellers, but that the implication of legalization is that in the short run you'd need more law enforcement or a crackdown on pot sellers. And why is that?
That will be true if, under legalization, the legal price is higher than the illegal price. And that partly depends on other details. I think the new decisions that the Washington State Liquor Board has made about cannabis supply suggest the price is going to actually be lower in the legal stores. And then I don't think it'll take much effort to push over the illegal market.
Mm.
But in general, a taxed and regulated system doesn't compete very well with an untaxed and unregulated system. And therefore, you've got to make sure that you don't get your legal system undercut. You can regulate all you like, but if people aren't buying through your system, then it doesn't matter.
I mean, were the folks in Washington happy to hear that? Because that's exactly the opposite of what one of the purported big selling points of legalization is. The thought is that you wouldn't have to put law enforcement effort into the marijuana market anymore.
Well, again, in the medium and long run, you mostly don't. That is, how much time does Massachusetts law enforcement spend chasing liquor stills? Not very much.
Mm-hmm.
Because moonshine liquor simply doesn't compete very well with what you get in the liquor store.
Right.
And I think the same thing will be true of cannabis, but you need to manage the transition.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that all of this would be heavily price dependent as well. And I mean, my basic economics says that for as long as a substance is illegal, black market prices are inflated because of the fact that it's illegal. How do you create a price point for marijuana once it's legalized?
Well, the natural price of legal marijuana is close to zero. I mean, you can produce a joint for roughly what it costs to produce a tea bag. So all of the price of cannabis is going to be taxed to a first approximation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would do is simply set a tax level that's pretty close to the current illegal price on the theory that most consumers would rather have the legal product than the illegal product. But the lower the price, the greater the risk of people using too much of it.
Okay, so you're basically you recommend a dynamic taxing system. So just to be sure I understand this correctly, so that the price of the legal marijuana is always just a bit lower than the black market stuff, even though technically, ostensibly, there would be no black market in a state where it's completely legal?
That's a reasonable guideline. Notice, by the way, even in a state where it's completely legal, it'll still be illegal to sell to minors, right? We have an illegal market in alcohol,
mm-hmm.
which is basically grown-ups buying for kids. But that doesn't generate the kind of black market problem that you get with street dealing.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think once you've got a legal market and it's available and it's labeled and it's known to be safe and it's not illegal to buy, people will choose that over smuggled stuff.
But in Washington, a dynamic taxing system or homeostatic, as I've heard you describe it in the past, is not what they have. I mean, I'm seeing that they're going to tax it 25% when growers sell to processors, then 25% when processors sell to retailers, and then another 35% when customers actually buy it, to the tune of $2 billion a year in revenue for the state.
No. Back up. The $2 billion was an maximum estimate over 5 years made by the state revenue department before the law was passed.
Okay.
The total cannabis market in Washington, we estimated around $1.2 billion. By we, I mean our partners at RAND. $1.2 billion. It looks like the state's going to wind up with something like 40% of the total that consumers spend. So 40% of 1.2 is something like $500 million a year.
Okay. But it's
$2 billion over 5 years is not an unreasonable number, assuming the price stays high. As the price starts to fall, the revenue falls. And so I think in the long run, they won't be getting very much.
Right. And, I mean, I guess
unless they change their tax system.
But it doesn't sound like they wanted that they're going to. That it's just it was more politically feasible for the state of Washington to just create a fixed taxation structure.
Well, again, it was simpler to put on a bumper sticker if you had to sell it to the voters. Mm-hmm. That's the reason I prefer legislation to initiatives if you've got the choice, because there's. Einstein once said about theories in physics that they ought to be as simple as possible, but no more so.
Yeah.
And the problem is that the level of complexity you can fit into your 30-second spot is probably not great enough to encompass the complexity of this particular problem.
Yeah. Listeners, I'm speaking with Mark Kleiman. He's a professor of public policy at the UCLA School of Media and Public Affairs. And he was also one of the, or possibly the chief advisor that the state of Washington turned to help craft its newly legal marijuana market, which becomes legal officially next month. And he's walking us through some of the more thorny and unexpected challenges when you try to create a legal market out of a once illegal substance. Mark Kleiman, let me ask you about something that people in Massachusetts are already grappling with, and that is the medical marijuana market.
Mm-hmm.
Because what effect would full legalization have on medical marijuana? Washington has the same issue there.
Washington has a very wide open medical market. Untaxed, unregulated, virtually anybody can get a recommendation. And that's going to be the biggest competitor to the legal market. I think the illegal market will fade fairly quickly. The legislature asked the Liquor Board and the Health Department and the Revenue Department to figure out what to do about the medical system. And they made recommendations last month, which would essentially fold it into the commercial system. There's no particular reason to have two sets of stores. And in fact, the testing that's going to be required in the commercial system is something that the medical patients should very much want. So I think what we're going to wind up with is something like a tax exemption system so that people with legitimate medical need don't have to pay the heavy taxes that recreational users will pay. But other than that, it'll be one system. That would be my ideal. A question that's come up is whether the people with medical recommendations should be allowed to continue to produce for their own use, to be able to grow their own.
Yeah.
And that's our – I don't believe Massachusetts allows – self-production, is that correct?
At this point in time, I believe that is correct. We'll have to double-check that, but I do believe it's correct.
So if all you have is stores, then you take the medical dispensary sign off and you put the retail outlet sign on, and maybe you have two counters, one for the people with medical recommendations and the other for everybody else, and you don't charge tax for the medical users. That seems to me fairly straightforward.
So this is there's sort of a corollary concern that's come up even in states that only have legalization of medical marijuana, and now it's sort of a redoubled concern in states surrounding surrounding Washington and Colorado, and that's the effect of what if the legal pot in marijuana in Washington is purchased legally there, but essentially is then resold in the black market in neighboring states.
Big problem if you let the price go down. So that's one strong reason to have taxes or other rules that keep the prices high. But yes, at the point where the retail price gets below the illicit wholesale price, and I think that's going to happen much more quickly in Colorado than in Washington, where the taxes are lower and the prices in the medical outlets are also lower, then you're simply going to have dealers from Boston organizing groups of college students from Boulder to go from dispensary to dispensary, buying an ounce at a time, and then ship it off by FedEx Ground. And that's again, a problem you could make go away simply by keeping the prices in the legal market close to those in the illegal market.
Now, Mark Kleiman, you did your PhD at the Kennedy School of Government. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So the New Yorker quoted the first book that you published after your PhD, where you wrote that legalization presents a near complete solution to the problem of the illicit market, but a potentially huge increase in the social costs of consumption. And then later on, you wrote in the LA Times that in what is kind of an unspoken truth about a lot of substances, and that is the only way to sell a lot of pot is to create a lot of potheads. Not casual, moderate recreational users, but chronic, multiple joints per day, zonkers. Now, in this manner, marijuana is exactly the same as gambling and alcohol, that the vast majority of the profits come from a small group of super users, essentially, the chronic users. Do you think places like Washington and Colorado have a full handle on how to grapple with the social cost of legalization?
They're certainly aware of the problem. Again, it's just like the alcohol problem. I think we've done a bad job with controlling alcohol. So I'm not happy to do the same thing with cannabis. The good news is that cannabis simply is not as dangerous as alcohol. So having a lot of people who are chronically stoned is not as bad as having a lot of people who are chronically drunk. Again, high price is something that doesn't bother the casual user at all, but might put a limit on very heavy use, and might put a limit on use by juveniles. So I keep fixating on price. There's another proposal which nobody but me is taking seriously at the moment, which is say, look, if you're going to be a cannabis buyer, you want to set yourself a quota.
Right. You suggested to Washington that buyers basically be issued licenses where they get to choose how much they're going to buy per year.
That was not a suggestion I made to Washington because that's simply not in their legislation.
Okay.
But it's certainly something I would suggest. And it has the advantage that you're not limiting anybody's freedom. Anybody can set any quota he wants. But you're giving people a chance to maintain their self-control in the face of what will be very persuasive marketing from the cannabis industry. I don't believe that the alcohol and tobacco companies are going to come into the cannabis market because I don't think they'll have any advantage in it. But I don't have any reason to think that the cannabis companies will be less skilled or more ethical in their marketing practices than the alcohol companies, the tobacco companies, or for that matter, the Massachusetts State Lottery, which is utterly unprincipled in trying to promote problem gambling because that's where the money is.
Mark Kleiman, let me ask you, Washington and Colorado are on the vanguard regarding statewide legalization. But as we began this segment, ballot questions or legislative initiatives could be coming to a number of states in the next couple years. What's your greatest worry about the slow tide of legalization across the country?
I'm glad it's a slow tide because we ought to learn from Colorado and Washington in ways that will help the next players do better. What I'm worried about is that both in Colorado and Washington, we're locking in a moderately taxed, somewhat regulated commercial market, again, on the alcohol model. That's not the only option. You could have legal cannabis with not-for-profit only production. You could either let people grow their own or form co-ops, or you could have not-for-profit, community-based organizations growing it and selling it. You could have a state monopoly like the state lotteries. Those are both important alternatives to commercial legalization, but we're not pursuing those. And I'm worried that by the time we get to national legalization, which I think will be sometime in the next decade, we will have locked in the alcohol system for cannabis.
The New Yorker quoted you in a recent speech where you said, "The primary impact of legalization is that there will be probably 650,000 fewer arrests each year, 40,000 fewer people behind bars, and an additional 15 billion stoned hours. You have to decide whether a stoned hour is a good thing or a bad thing." By what econometric tool, if any, can states decide the value of a stoned hour?
Right. That's John Calkins' calculation. I wish I could claim it. But yes, and the answer is they're not all the same. Right. Somebody who finds that he enjoys spending a couple of hours in an altered state every Friday night is probably getting some benefit from that. And I'd call that a good thing. Somebody who gets up in the morning every morning and gets wrecked out of his mind and spends his life in that condition, I think those hours are social bads. And I don't think there's any econometric technique for figuring out which is which. But remember that most of the cannabis is going to go to heavy consumption and not casual use.
Well, that's Mark Kleiman. He's professor of public policy at the UCLA School of Media and Public Affairs. He's one of the nation's foremost experts on the policy decisions or challenges around the legalization of marijuana. And he advised the state of Washington in its journey towards legalization, which begins January of 2014. Mark Kleiman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Well, stay with us. There's more of the show coming up. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.